know it's a short business. But I want to wish you. I know everybody wants to wish something. I want to wish you opening up your spiritual eyes and your Christmas gift.
Thank you.
And learn to relate to the Father by the memory of approval before initiation. We all practice meditation. We hear a lot of it. We read a lot about it. But in the actual intimate moments, the ray of memory that stands out is something that is tangible at the time when you ask for something very important for the transformation of your life. Initiation is taking the responsibility to drive your own car. And the car is your mouth, the capacity to regulate the appetite by the spoken word. Only the initiate is given that opportunity. A non-initiate is a passenger. He's always, or she is always, forgiven by the compassionate nature of the initiate who is fully realized. So, in essence, the initiate is one who makes the effort to know what they are and their full relationship with the Creator. And the memory of the approval is your mind. I'm not your guru, nor your guru all the time. Inside you. And the bond that you have with him is that evidence of approval. You know what it is? Great. A rainbow. One of the things, or the questions that we all know, is called resurrection. This week we had an initiation in Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, California area. And the young lady had asked while I was there if she could be initiated. And I said, no, I don't know if they approved. I'll be leaving on Sunday. And if one of the three things show up, you'll be approved. But you know, you had a head of big wig. A lot of rain, snow fell all over the place. Some people saw three rainbows in different parts of the country. So they got initiated into proof. They really opened their heart. So it's a great for them to have something that they can do. More than that, I wish you the utmost of hope and peace with your life. That's the real bonding. And it is the actual journey of the sperm to the ovum as a molecular structure igniting when it bonded back into its atomic nature. So there's nothing to panic about. And so when you go back to the process, anytime you hear the different writings in the men and women who've gone through it, referring to it as the night of the soul, many different terms, simply because the way they were programmed in the actual language of the who more than the what. But when you go through what you are and really complete the process, it's a fantastic discovery of your relationship with God. It's not somebody sitting in the throat waiting for you when you're dead. Or some fellow that is far waiting for you when you're dead either. He's right to look at your nose. So if you don't recognize him there, you'll never recognize him. But you have to be, have that intimate communion. spend the next few months here together in reflecting upon the approval of each one we had to have in the world. Because that's a religious Christmas gift to yourself. It's the Christ nature. Because, as Jesus would say, pick up your cross, you can't pick up his. And he would pick up your ideas. So he had his own approval, and you had your own. But just trying to reflect and integrate with it, that's very lovely. He couldn't give any other commandment other than ask for what was already there. Learn to love with all your mind and heart. And you know, with all your mind, you can't sleep. Can't go above deep. With all of your heart, it's the pumping in there. And all your strength in your breath. All of your soul, that's the integrity of living your word. Because you're living soul, you don't have a soul. You are soul. You are. You are the direct manifestation of the creative principle. The initiate knows that. The non-initiate doesn't know that. But the non-initiate has to be encouraged in his belief in order to make a transition. So that one day, when they go from passenger to driver, you know, very good. Those who made that transition aren't making it because of some kind of physical imagination. They're doing it because they have tangible memory to relate to. That is not imagination. Cosmic laws to which your love has generated. So, as an issue, your love is more intensified this time of the year than most people can understand. We love our brothers and sisters who sing their carols and their tremendous love by belief, but they are still passengers. We can't raise them from our consciousness. We have to look at them and love them. But the initiate follows the inner path, the path that Jesus and all the saints follow. It's called the path of mastery, the living self. That's why realizing can say to the non-initiated person, your mistakes are forgiven. But to themselves, no. It's something for something. Not my will, but my will be done. They live the moment and they fulfill the spoken word. Whatever they say, they will live. That's why they used to say the code of the lesson was the man that put his word, right? That's the essence of spirituality. As you live it more and you recognize it more, understand for the first time that you and creative consciousness are one the same. So let us go in and fill ourselves with that great love. And we have to give the body time to absorb the changes, and then they come back and
leave.
Like that. See, the in soul, the Christian wants to have a biological body, and you are operating. That's what you are. You are operating to the biological clock. It is preposterous to think God is somewhere resting in the universe. If there's 6 days to be there, there's 1 day to be rest. And that's a statement that's written in agricultural language. God can't rest. That's not funny. But it's to understand what they were saying, so what is actually occurring. Within the six movements of the body, you have 12 upward movements in polarity. So, if the 12 organs happen in the clock, you have 6 polarity movements going on inside of you. They're called ascending, descending, for the first 12 hours of the day. And then the next 12 hours of the day, they're opposite in action. So when a person has an injury at a certain time of the day, certain organs shut down, certain organs dilate. But you don't know that until you have to work through correcting the after pain in that organ. See, if you break a bone, you get x-ray and put it in a cast, and then it has to heal. But all the muscle structure around it would be in a state of constriction or dilation, depending on how it's damaged. Then the organ, which is operating at a time in the body that controls, be in a state of ascending or descending, and you will be locked into it. But then, because you're unaware of it, your mind is put off to other ideas, which is to avoid related to the body. So, in the outward movement of the 24 hours, you have, what you say, creative consciousness working through you as a Christ consciousness, holding you together to function. And sonic or music to nurture you. By the same token, the body is operating internally as a self-corrective principle of resting and compensating. And this is called the 6 days resting, working, and 1 day resting. This is actually compensatory function of yourself, healing and correcting themselves within 24 hours. So they have a sort of a pause period as they go in. So when you notice that when you breathe, you inhale, but you don't push it right out back, there's a period of pause in between inhalation and exhalation. And it's that pause is what you're calling the rest period. So God is the rest again. But the principle inside of you is to pull up the ascending and descending functions of the organ in a certain rhythm, and then between each breath there's pause, each organ there's a certain rest state going on. So instead of 4 hours, you are actually cleaning up and rebuilding the body while you are working with it. So the purpose is to arrive at the non-eating state what the whole essence is in the functional map and rhythm. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word of the spirit that comes to God. The music process is to clean you up and get you conscious that all the minerals in your body are synchronized to different frequencies. And as soon as you put the body in proper alignment, music will take over and move these elements within you to be on time all the time. See, light is actually elements of a certain weight and pH factor moving at a certain rate to you all the time. That's what light is. God is that. He is the element within a certain weight and a certain pH factor moving on time all the time. Now it's not a person, it's a principle. That's what we call spirit or spiral. It's the force of code by resonance. So you are the spoken word crystallized in flesh. But you have to work your way back to the origin of it inside of you. And music is a means to get there. And that's why we play the tape. It's the primary to line up the end of the design so that you can work back to that level. Today we are saying that these periods actually are involved with the 12 signs of the zodiac and the 12 organ functions within you. And that if you are ready to call it solar nutrition, and we haven't just see, we haven't had enough exposure yet to it. In class 8, it deals with these 12 movements inside of you at different intervals of the 12 days after Christmas. How to use it to feed the body without eating at different time frequencies. And in the Oriental philosophies, they call it element law. So they don't go too deep into the macrocosm, they just go with certain. Percentage of this. It goes deeper than that. The ancient people knew their science very well, and they knew that the human mechanism was actually a miniature model of the creative principle. And it was like a clock, so it was about all the models there. And that the man Jesus came to show in his time frame how to synchronize it. So those actual 12 days really represent the basic 12 organs in the body in certain rhythms to the astrological time of the zodiac. For instance, the first day after Christmas would be allowed with death time. And then it goes that direction. From the larger chest line to the stomach, then to the spleen, down to the heart, to the swollen chest line, the third bladder, kidney, pericardium, thyroid, gallbladder, liver, back to the lungs. In the musical scale, you have do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, mi, do. The lung is on the road. It's the initial consciousness in you as the manifested Christ and as the cosmic principle of God in the person. So Christ is not a person. Christ is a creative intelligence within the vibratory structure of matter. It is God acting through the physical frame of matter, and it's called Christ or Son, S-U-N, or light. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. The I Am principle is manifested in the vibratory rate of the body as a tingling sensation. And this tingling sensation, like this cord plugging to the socket over there, if you were to touch it, it would be tingling. But then it's a spark. That same law is there in external observation. It's also in you. And it's totally universal in all its dimensions. But then, for another speed, it's encapsulated back in its cosmic consciousness of the organization. So the Father encloses the Son and the Son is in the Father. Meaning the sonics encapsulate light, and light is not the sonics, and slows down and becomes matter. So we who are a crystallization of this principle are endowed with individuality. Have you ever looked at a TV set and you plug it down and turn it on, but don't put it on no station? What does the screen look like? No? It looks like a mass of little dots or rings moving all over the place, right? But none of them collide nor smash up or explode. Each one is so uniquely timed to what? Miss each other. That's exactly what individuality is. We cannot, but it's to understand what it's doing. The mechanical world, you get a true understanding of the inner world, which means the invisible world. There's no spiritual place somewhere in the metaphysical. It's just in the way they speak. They never use the word invisible. They use it as the word method, beyond. Now, there's nothing beyond physical. Everything here is physical in two speeds. A visible speed and a non-visible speed, and we are crystallization of it, and we have to work with it. We can't work through it, then we develop belief systems, and belief systems will lead us into fanatical action. That's how come we got more wars in humans. It's not the belief in God that will save us, it's the knowledge of God that will liberate us from our ignorance. So we have to understand what we are, not who we are.
It is how for those companies to concentrate on those organs, for purification.
For purification?
Or for, what would you call it?
The pure in heart, you've got what you still
do. Well, not purification, but to understand with it. Would there be any kind of a meditation that you would have to be consciously aware of that at that point? Or is it better just to let it be?
No. The answer for that is yes, no, maybe. You see, unless you haven't gone through, you would never come to that kind of observation. Yes, you can spend hours verbalizing in imagination, as what they call prayer unceasingly, to bring your consciousness in alignment with that particular organ in order for it to be in a state of homeostasis or healthy balance. That is, it will filter through elements on time, all the time, within the proper quantity and pH factor to be a healthy functioning organism. And so that is one way we can. Called prayer ceasingly, or affirmation, or visualization, or contemplation, but we're using some in the form of words to focus on that particular part of the analysis. But then you come to a more deeper understanding of what it is. You can't get a better if you think that, but no matter how you try. So with all the purge, you're not going to experience the fact that your organ is changing. And so that you need to go to the next stage of understanding what you are instead of who you are. From that standpoint, you have to be able to watch within your structure how it is interacting by constricting and dilating, and don't try to analyze that constriction and dilation like a computer. You become a camera. It's the difference between a camera and a computer. A camera doesn't analyze the pictures of the truth or give any dissertation about what this is photographic. But a computer will make every kind of statements about things. So that's what we have to phase out. We have to phase out the computing part of our mind while we're watching and be a camera. That's how come the ancient man referred to himself as Jehovah's Witness. He was a witness. He was my computer. He used the term witness to give a clue to the actual internal camerizing or photographic or focusing. And when you watch, that's basically what you're doing. And you begin to be like a child now. The child is watching and observing and showing. Then after a while, the geometry starts to even out. There is no geometry, there is no alphabet or label, and there is no number of quantum. It is just light in some ways passing through you, and then it starts to resolve itself in the very order that needs to stabilize itself. Now, right there you have an anguish, because we are so familiar to relate to geometry and an alphabet to label it, and some number to come from it is. When we don't have it, we tend to panic. In the early writings of the, we used to call it the night of the soul, where there is no geometry, it's blank. But then if you ask yourself, what is peace of mind? Is it a blank? Is it geometrical or non-geometrical? The word peace, think of it. Does it have geometry? It's like a clean slate. It's like a glass that's transparent. You just look at truth for what you are. And that's what they call peace of mind. Within the non-geometrical makeup of your cellular functioning, you are actually watching how you're put together for the first time, like the TV camera with little molecules shooting all over the place. But for the first time, you're watching those little molecules moving without being bumped by your brain. So you're totally inside of this whole little globe of light. But then, the reason we panic is because we don't have any geometry to relate to, we don't feel confident to what we're proven to. But if you don't panic, and that's the only rule I'd say in the whole process. Rule number one, don't panic. Rule number two, don't panic. Rule number three, don't panic. The worst that can happen to you is fall asleep. And the best that can happen to you, you wake up full of vitality and you say you're very horny and hormonal. You're full of aliveness. You're not for God, and God is aliveness. And you can't tell that people that go forth multiply. You can't own anything here in the first place, so you have dominion. In other words, learn to work with it.
But don't try to panic while we're at the control of this movement. So that's what would happen to the cellular structure, and you're relying on Jesus as I and my Father are one. You see me, you see the Father. And the things I do, you do also, and greater things that you do when the situation presents itself. So basically, you come back to the internal uniformity of your atomic structure, seeing the pure light and hearing the resonance of the sound. Now, the third thing that you want as you look inside is not so much not seeing geometry, because that's what it calls peace and heart, is all understanding. There's no geometry there. You're totally at peace in a state of blank. Many of us can't function in that state because we're too familiar or over-programmed to want something to hang on to. So Jesus said, the peace I give, the world will give. The world gives you 6 feet under the ground. But I give you the strength to cope with a state of blank, without panic, that you can get up and work in a state of service to yourself and environment without panicking or going into the jitters or feeling the whole environment is going to collapse. No. In that state, you have another function that takes over, and that function is the joy. Now, joy has no geometry either, and it's both personal and impersonal at the same time. So the elation that comes from it is what generates sanity. That's why they refer to the person as a saint. I'm not holier than you. Maybe a hole for the first time. I shake out all the debris of my mental garbage and look at me and start to accept myself more rational and functional. This is a joyousness that is there. It doesn't leave you absolutely gone through it. It's not a sensation. You will try to shake it. The best of it, many times you see you leave it, but it's never. You laugh, you cry, you come back laughing. There's no way to get rid of it. So you understand why on Christmas Eve night you hear somebody in a sleigh say, ho 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 ho. He's having fun coming in through a chimney and leaving a present, you know. In the inner consciousness, you hear music. These are sounds that the cellular makes. And then the composers, the people who compose, they heard these sounds and then they formed instruments, the magic, and put it together. But there is an unending musical process going on in this wonderful structure. To be at the same way for the structure of the music of the day. That's how come it said, if music be the food of the soul, play on. To put it in the proper context, if sonic resonance is the cause of the 144 elements, which becomes activated by constriction and dilation from living soil into music, that means play on. If you hear these resonances within your own cellular structure and identify them, the whole body is elated. They call it ecstasy. But you can live it for the first time, you can relate to it in your environment and not be a victim of a belief system, but actually know that all around you are brothers and sisters. But you can't push them to accept themselves. They have to accept themselves as their own self-capability. And so the compassionate nature emerges out of the person. First, you don't see why you should be compassionate to some jerk who hurt you. Could you ever be compassionate to somebody who hurt you? You want to knock them back in the head, right? You get evil to them. Sure, that's natural, rational. But as you But that is because
you relate to who you are. And when you start to understand what you are, then the compassion state arises. And before you know it, all the trials and tribulations that you've gone through or happened with you don't have any real weakening effect. You work through them and you're free. But you gotta go through. That's the one point of being gone. That's why the Buddha used to say, pick up your cross, don't pick up mine. Yes.
You talk about love and this, the light on your love, etc. And when we're so fixated and traumatized and we do all this stuff, how do we know what that love is? How do we know how to focus on it?
It's difficult to love when you're hurt. You have two levels of love. You have an impersonal love and you have a personal love. It's the personal love that gets hurt by conflict with another person. The impersonal love never gets hurt, because when you go to sleep at night and you're sound asleep, the personal love is shut down. So you don't even know if the other person is existing. But the impersonal love is there to keep you alive as long as you breathe. And that's God, that's the breath of your mechanism. That's the impersonal love. But the personal love will be when you wake up next morning, you see the person. That's the conflict you have inside of you. So it's only personal love that gets hurt. The impersonal love doesn't get hurt. The impersonal love is breath. That's why in the tape that you got, I only have time for you, that's the mantra of the tape. God only has time for us, and that's very personal. And so he supplies us with air to breathe and live. But then he has endowed us with individuality. That makes it personal to ourselves. So we relate to each other from that level, and it's in the personal level of the expression where the attachment occurs. Because you feel we want to possess or be possessed. And then when a irritation or a conflict comes up, we feel hurt. And we don't know how to let go. But then, if we could let go the individuality of the personal hurt from the personal level, then the compassionate nature emerges to the personal level. See, for example, if you were a child growing up and you irritated your mother and she got angry with you and she hit you one slap in the head, that was the final slap, you never woke up no more. That's the end of her love for you. But she can't do that because you're her child, so she smacked you enough to keep you quiet for a while. But as you grow up more and more, she's going to accept you as a person capable of accepting your responsibility. And that's the same way your prodigal son. the prodigal son took his father's money and went out and squandered it all. But then it's the person who turns to say to himself, he's in the middle of the situation. What does he do? So he wants to go back and ask his father for a job, just in order to eat. And so when he turns around to go home, the father meets him halfway. That's the impersonal love, meeting you as a person. So the two begin to merge back. It's called your compassionate nature. Whenever you reflect upon a hurt, or having been hurt, or to have hurt someone, these are the personal levels of you. But then you begin to reflect that there must be more to it. Then the compassionate nature emerges, then forgiveness comes along. So it's only at the personal level we're actually hurt by attachment. The impersonal level has no attachment. And it's easy to resolve or recognize is when you go to bed at night and you fall asleep, you don't know if that person exists. So your personal relationship is totally suspended, totally forgotten what they've done to you or what you've done to them. But while you're sound asleep, the impersonal love, which is the breath, is holding you and keeping you in that state. So you wake up next day to start all over again with the personal interaction of your conscious identity. So then as soon as you see the other person, you start all over again.
You're taking
us to
not sleep. Huh? You're taking
us to
not sleep.
Pretty rough deal, huh?
Well, then, say, with that, say, give it all your love, then that's not a personal thing. It's a tension with the breath, isn't it?
That's right. When you look inside at the initiation and you see the light and I say, give it all your love, it's not a personal action, it's an impersonal integrating with your true nature, what you are. And that is locking in with the breath. And it's more of a camera effect that you're trying to relate to than a computer effect. See, if you want to analyze, am I seeing a light, what's your measurement, that's computing. But if I just watch and feel how my body expands and contracts without analyzing it, this is what we call the camera effect. That's what they call it witnessing. So we have to go the full gamut of it. It's through that process, the personal labels start to phase down and the impersonal feeling takes over and the compassionate nature emerges. And so they call that in Buddhahood the compassionate nature. You're reaching the end of the intellect and merging with your intuition to see the whole picture of what you are.
So what's attached then? Is it the mind? Like, is the emotion in the mind the same thing? Like, if you go into the camera position within yourself where you just become a witness, is that automatically then release the most emotional fixation thing?
Yes, because that's what Jesus said. Unless you become like one of these, you can't put the thing in the head. And who is he pointing to? How true are the child? And what does a child do? That's all it does, it's not messing up. I spent the whole day doing that to see what it was all the effect, you know, reliving these labels and only discovering that the analytical part of the brain slowed down. All the other parts of my anatomy were totally tuned up. The breathing got intense, the sensation of tingling was intense, and other parts of the anatomy began to resonate. I became aware for the first time that a baby or a child that is not intellectualizing is actually in tune with the creative force field of
feeling that I had experienced as a child growing up, didn't know what it meant, so I understood anything, and I just ignored it to satisfy my fear and say, A, B. And if you say B at any point, you know, and then they're going to strike you out, that's A. And you can't say B, you got to say exactly what you want to say. Have you ever recalled at what age the word door was actually a door to you to walk through? Apart from they said door, door, and then you repeat door, door, but it didn't really mean anything to you. It's just a repetition. But the actual opening in the wall, when it really clicked in your brain to mean that the door was different from the window. They both look like two openings in the wall, right? And the first time you hear it, door, window, door. It didn't mean anything to you, you just had to repeat it. But there was a period in your life, between 1 to 7, when it clicked. The difference between the door and the window. You know what day was that? It's when you run into the window of college door.
Right.
Social media, right? That's what we call the camera and the computing meter. Brain goes here. But if you can relive those conditions as a replaying a memory, the consciousness that.
Or channeling other whatever.
Well, let's look at this in the yes, no, and the maybe. Do we have three bodies in the terms of yes before we go in the term of no and then in the term maybe? Early men having what is called interspatial observation of himself saw his mechanism experiencing a displacement in time space from the speed of the brain, but didn't understand it, so he felt he was outside of his body. When he was actually inside of the body, looking at his own body externally, and it would be similar, like you go to a movie house and you look at the screen and the picture comes on, and you would live with a full conviction that the picture is actually in the screen. Yet somebody will nudge you and say, no, the picture is not in the screen, and you'll swear on a stack of Bible that picture is on the screen. And the person said, no, look up and you'll see. And you see a light going all the way back. Oh, no, it can't be. That's the way the picture is. And you'll want to beat that person into the ground, not accept that some gadget behind you is creating this particular condition. And that's what the yes will do to us in certain levels of fixation. Now, we don't have actually three bodies, but we do experience a tri-process in ourselves that may make us believe we have three bodies. And that's what the yes is applied to. The no is, there is one body, 144 elements. 143 are actual. The 144th one is what you hear coming out of my mouth. So, in the beginning was the big hot wind called words, meaning 143 elements. But this hot wind can play games with itself by acceleration. So we have three speeds based upon the voice. A speed to be chemical fixed to be measured, and it's called the physical body. Another speed by a shift in the acceleration to either hyper or hypo. That's why all the diseases in the world fall under two categories. you're too fast or you're too slow. Right? So, so that's why we don't have anything other than measuring it that way. And this puts it in what they call electrical as a reading. So your so-called electrical body is nothing but an acceleration of this basic element operating in a hyper or hypo state. Then you have a third acceleration where you can attract or repel, because the 144 elements attract and repel each other to interrelate and balance themselves out. So that is called magnetic or spiritual, so or causal. These are the four agricultural terms of describing bodies. Physical is the actual element. Astral is the electrical frequency that lights up and glows like a phosphorus in the night. You see the paint an object with the phosphorus paint, and then nighttime comes, the object glows. And so you may say, this object has another body. But your own phosphorus is doing that. So Yogananda used to tell his students, don't adrenalize, learn to phosphorize. So everybody used to go wrong with the owner. So, but then it's an acceleration within your own nature of the active elements and their qualities. And that was referred to as aura, the shunt lit up, and the early men wrote like that. And finally, it was classified as astral starlight. It was seen to be outside. So they were referred to by location. But these were active speeds. And then came the last condition, where the same physical body could operate in the traction-repulsion frequency. And it was called magnetic or spiritual or causal. Causal meaning the actual cause, and spiritual meaning non-physical. But then they always say if a person is spiritually very loving, and to be very loving, I got to either say, I love you or you love me. So I'm attracted to you or you're attracted to me. So that's how we talk to represent love. But if you don't like me, you stay away from me, so you call that hate. So attraction is love and repulsion is hate. See? So we're talking magnetism now. So what we're really saying is we're learning to shift the different speeds in the chemistry of our mechanism to have the two other operational functions that were classified as bodies, but they're not actual bodies. It's a frequency within that same mass. So this chemical body is electrical also, and it is magnetic also, all in the same substance, but in three different speeds. Now, I don't know if you saw the picture called Altered States, where the man went through the three different speeds. But the only speed that was tangible for him to relate was the hitting his hand to create solidity out of the magnetic and the electrical, because there was no sensation there. You can't love magnetically. You can't love electrically, because there's no feeling. To actually feel and relate to his wife, it had to be chemical. But yet, it looked like three bodies in the one man. But it's actually three speeds of the one man that you were actually looking. They did a very good presentation, Mr. Thompson. But it's the chemical body, which is touch. So I call it the thinking ouch. Because it's only here you can feel and relate and appreciate. So this is where they call the chemical frame with three speeds. And one speed is tangible texture, this is the chemical. That's the electrical, the heat, and then the pushing back of the muscle. This is the magnetic. So it's your own actual ability to shift the three speeds. Now comes the maybe. Maybe. Because God is the creative principle and is the sole content in the universe and slows himself down to appear as a manifestation. That's how come the statement, come, let us make man. Come, let us make a manifestation. But come, let us is plural. There's no singularity in the word us. So us could be all the 144 elements operating in polarity as opposites and in rhythm to slow down to be a manifestation, which is the male-female representation of this polarity. And God breathed into men. That tells you manifested forms don't breathe. They are infused. And we see that when the baby is in the womb, it doesn't breathe through its nostril. It's oscillating through the mouth and it's pressured through the umbilical cord by the parent on a compression principle. And as soon as the cord is cut, the mouth oscillates, the nostril dilates, and then the air goes in. And if it is on time, the baby will stay functional. If it's not, you'll try to use mechanical gadgets to establish it. And if it doesn't hold, that's it. You tell the parent it didn't work. Start all over again. But that's the facts we have to work with. So once we look at the facts, then we're not afraid of what we are. We can better understand it. So we are pressurized as a form to be an individuality or an individual to relate in the state of manifestation of the 144 elements. Now, in actuality, this creative principle is enjoying the opportunity it gives itself to be a form in order to talk to itself. That's funny. Therefore, all the elements are drafted, they don't volunteer. So none of us here could ever say we have any sense of freedom in the true nature, because we don't know how we're put together, and we have to live through this process to feel some sense of depletion or deprivation as emotional senses. But these are actual laws going on in terms of magnetism in us. Now, in that level, this creative principle became his universe and sets it up to go forth, multiply, and have dominion over it, but no franchises. But here is the funny part of it. If that process was complete, it wouldn't set it up to interact. It's because it's set up in order to interact. Individuality is a permanent gift within the creative unified field to look at itself as an image in a mirror to talk to itself. So you're always going to feel, if you're sitting down in a room by yourself and you look all around, there comes a moment in that you want to get up and do something. You feel what? You feel irritable, right? You gotta get up and do something. There's nobody in the room, it's beautiful. You're sitting there, all by yourself. There comes a moment when you want to get up to do something. And this is the driving principle inside of the individual through the unified field. So, because that state exists like that, early men call it the illusion. He referred to that as the Maya. He's living an illusion. He can't stay stationary. He can't appreciate being in a state of peace, because he doesn't know what it is to be in peace. He doesn't have any way to integrate with it. So programming becomes a means to trigger the brain to be satisfied. So it talks to itself. So if you say creative intelligence took the 144 elements and manifested a form called man or woman to play the role of self-conversation in order to experience sensation in terms of conversation, then 99% of the man's or woman's lifespan in the manifestation is spent in cellular conversation. You call it thinking. When can you sit down and be by yourself, zip up your lips, and drop your brain from thinking? You notice if you are doing? All the time is doing something, and yet you run for the four elements in a crystallized form called body. Deactivate it and put you back at the 144 elements in a container like a Timbler Bhabuti. And see what happens then. There would be no interaction. Yet, looking at the Bhabuti there, it says, now I gotta make a manifestation. So up stands up a tall man, a replica of yourself. And that is going to confront you now. Why did you make me? Who are you? And so this infusion principle goes on. All right. The next way they went to explain this particular phenomenon was, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. And the Word was made flesh and dwells where? Donkey, trees, or man? Good, okay. It dwells in man. So if there was nothing here, and in the beginning was Word, so God wants to talk, but he doesn't have no way to talk to but himself. But then, since he can't have himself to talk to, other than 144 elements, what is he going to do? Xerox himself to talk to himself like a clone. And we are his billions of clones out here in all shapes and forms, primarily to do what? Talk back to him. So Jesus would say, if you see me, you see the Father. I am the Father of one. Is he wrong? You can say the same thing. Wouldn't be anything from blasphemy. Because you're the 144 elements. And Jesus was the 144 elements. He's just validating a truth about what he is versus who he is. Therefore, the object is what you are in different self-confrontation. But in the beginning was the Word. You got to talk to yourself to accept yourself. And I'm going to show you. Adana, you're sitting on a chair, you want to go to the bathroom, you better lift up your foot and walk. And come on, Adana. Get to that bathroom. I'll stay here till I got my pants. So I got to actually move, right? So after you come to the realization, there is nothing here other than self-prompting yourself by verbalization, you realize that the three speeds inside of you are locked up in three words in reference to your mass. And the three words are in. Now in is impersonal, that's not geometry. Can you say where it's located? That's the first word. That's why they use in. Where is in located? It's a word we use every day. And see how you're trapped with it?
On the other side of out.
That's providing you can go. We can't go out of in because everything is inside of in. So, then we have the next word. In being impersonal, it's timeless. It doesn't have no geometry, and it doesn't have no limitation. So that is all inclusive, and it resonates. The next word it will resonate is the first letter of it, I. So they say, me big I, Moses, I am that I am. Moses saw the burning bush and everything inside their head or outside of his head. So he was forced to look at his own I-ness inside of himself when he was sitting up on the mountain, not trying to ponder what to do. And the next word is me. Thou shalt have no other gods or graven image before me. Me who? Now, in has no geometry. In has no time. In has no place. I has no geometry. I has no time. I has no place. Me has no geometry. Me has no time. Me has no place. But there's always more of it. They call it memory. So between the in and the I, the biggest conflict is memory. Because you can't seem to get around the memory that you are when you go to sleep. Last night when you went to sleep, when you were sound asleep, did you tell yourself, you know, wake up this morning, please go to work? Did you program yourself before you fell asleep last night what you're going to do today? Otherwise, where are you going to sleep for the first place? Huh? So the more of me takes predominance in the pre-state of sleep, or the pre-sleep state, to reinforce the I to get up today. But both me and I were stored inside of what you call a body. And you're totally unfamiliar with the body where you're sound asleep. But you know fully well you're inside someplace. Inside where? The apparent illusion of 144 elements acting as a body. See, now you have the three bodies. The in body, the I body, and the me body. Now, the in body is magnetic. The I body is electrical. And the me body is chemical. So more of me is always going on every time. Who am I? Me? Oh, I'm a Daniel. I'm a Daniel and so-so. I got a lot of labels for the me. And I'm going to impress you with my I-ness. I store it here in a place called in. So as long as I breathe, I can talk to myself. And then the big joke is from quote that says divine comedy. I'm full of hot air. So as long as I get enough hot air, I can impress my highness who he is. So there I go around living in this wonderful illusion of my own highness. See? Now, yet, a blow on the head and it's all over. A little oxygen in my nose and it starts all over again. So, when you begin to see the facts of what you are, all the other labels are useless. I wouldn't worry if you act with a psychological telephone booth for somebody. I'd rather know what I have. We are entitled to play the other game. That's why the Eastern yogis would say, this whole universe is an illusionary game of the who and the who's, locked up in a unified field called what. Then Mr. Einstein comes along and says, yes, relativity is all around us. And the relativity operates out of a unified field. And the core of the unified field is energy equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. So you haven't found anything here out of that or unified field providing an opportunity to experience relativity or dualistic games with ourselves. Now, the biggest anguish is letting go of your individuality to accept what you are. Many of us do not want to take that hand to inquire into what they are. They'd rather go along with who they are and what they're going to do with their life. But if they spend the time to inquire what they are, then there is no fear, because that's what Jesus and all these wise men came to teach. See people, and they use the word first, the kingdom of God is at the end. Seek this, what is inside of you first. And it's righteousness, how it operates with the I and the me. And it will free you. Free which part of you? It will free the I in you from the fixations of what the I represents, between the me and the in. Free men are Lord of yourself. But not self, because there's no self. Self. You become Lord of self. And Lord of self is storage and function. Compression, dilation. You master the compressive dilation principle, which is respiration, which is living. Now, death is non-breathing, non-respiration. Death is non-synchronization. Living is breathing and synchronization. So everlasting life is actual. If we phase out the I, accept the me within the inness of the structure, free man, Lord of self. Nobody here to take it away, use it yourself. But you have to recognize it to work with it. So I don't have three bodies, but I have three speeds to which I can integrate my body with. A chemical speed to which I can feel and touch and feel compassion or resentment in the personal part of my love. This one, now you hurt me, you son of a bitch, and I will kick you. Okay, kick me. But at the personal level, my personal self, okay, forgive him, he's my brother. So that's a speed in my chemistry I have to learn to access. The electrical part is, I have a choice to take care of myself or let somebody take care of me. So that is being a passenger or being a driver behind the wheel. The passenger is like a baby. Ain't going no place and sit down and wait. The driver is getting behind the wheel and going down the road. The yogis call that the cat and the monkey. Cats don't do a doggone thing when they're born. The mother can't pick them up by the neck and put them there, drop it. You ever see what they do? And they said, yeah, please. And the monkey is always busy trying to find my mother's back, take me along, and falls off most of the time, but gets up here. So this is the next level where you want to be responsible for yourself. That's the electrical nature, assuming your own personal identity to function within the world around you. For that reason, Jesus would say, he that doeth the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister. And he that followeth in my word is my disciple. That means you're like a pussycat. But the disciple is not above the master, nor the master above the disciple. They're not going to be friends. So we're all brothers and sisters, regardless if you study with me or not. So there is no guru other than God, which is a unified field, allowing you the freedom to look at yourself. So you have now your electrical nature, and then you have your magnetic nature. All three speeds work from inside you. So nobody owns you because why? God became you, so how can anybody own you? And how can you be owned by anybody if God became you? You are what now? Free man, Lord of yourself, right? Therefore you are the crystallized God, not a God. But endowed with individuality that cannot be revoked. That's why when you look at the TV set, it's a living model of the molecules of light all flowing around in a jungle of waves, but they're not smashing into each other, they're not breaking up. Each one is in, yet each one is a unique principle of the full light. That's what the magnetic or electrical part of the mechanical part. But now, nature leaves us certain ways to remind ourselves so we don't get lost in the phenomena of it. Since we don't want to assume responsibility, many of us like to be still passengers, we would avoid making up for our mistakes. So the fear of going in the womb to start all over again in an unfinished process will make you lose your memory. And therefore, anybody who has opened up their memory banks and have full use of it in a body form and have demonstrated high accomplishment with their individuality would not be so willing to phase down their memory to take on birth again to be of an asset for some form of contribution to their brothers and sisters. It's quite a challenge because you have to phase down the memory. But if you do take the challenge and you do run the race with all the others around you, and you do win again, because that's the opportunity, and you do activate your memory, you're God of Christ, amen. See? So that means that's the journey now open to all of us. But if you don't want to, then they're going to say, you have to hang around and do what? Probe somebody to listen to you, to admit that you exist. So how do you exist? As a form outside of the body, trying to get into the body in order to talk or to be heard. So that person who went through the race to win, they feel despondent because they're not feeling important in their who, not in their what. They are feeling very let down by who they think they are. So they may leave themselves vulnerable and susceptible to some other person who doesn't want to take the chance to go back into the womb to start all over to fight it, if they're capable of winning the race and make a contribution. So why are they tapping on the shoulder to listen to them if they got any contribution to make? The greatest contribution would be not to tap you on the shoulder, to try to journey through the womb and come out and be a contribution then. But we're not going to condemn it because, after all, this is what nature sets up for us to make us relate to. That there are those who don't want to take that chance, who hang around, and would use us who have taken the chance and feel despondent because we're locked up in the who, not the what. Now those who are not locked up in the who and are locked up in the what, they don't fail. They look at the overall picture and see what is involved, and then they look to nature to give them the answer. So nature has left them the answer. the difference between a butterfly and a moth. Are moths made from worms, or are they made from the egg of another moth?
Eggs laid by other moths.
Good. And they fly, right? Butterflies are made from worms who eat their way to the level known as a cocoon and then emerge as a butterfly. And it also flies. Now, between the moth and the butterfly, which is the most beautiful? Good. And of all the creatures that can fly or are endowed to fly, there's none more beautiful than the butterfly. Oh, so that's a quality again. Now, another thing is, the moth will fly to that light to die. The butterfly isn't that stupid. Yet, when the butterfly dies, and you compare his body with the moth's body after it flies to the light, you'll see the butterfly don't run, but the moth runs. Now, this is the difference between those who take the chance to go through the womb state to come out and live the principle of looking back at what they are versus bypassing and trying to get around shortcuts. So Jesus is saying, none come unto the Father but by me. Meaning, you really can't get back to the true state unless you accept what you are inside. Any other process is not going to work. And he who doesn't come through by the door is a thief. If you don't make the journey back through here by looking inside for what you are, you'll always try to do something for nothing attitude and end up fooling yourself. But we are not here to condemn them. The initiate is here to recognize the difference between the two processes open to understand what and who they are. So one is slower than the other in terms of accomplishment of the integrity of its nature. The other is fast in terms of the flesh pattern experiences. And Paul will tell you the difference because he went through both. And when he realized it, he made this statement to me, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, meaning all those who are caught into the psychic abilities, because he's been there too, because he was knocked off his horse, and he walked around for many years blind with all kinds of psychic abilities, he was born again Christian. But then he woke up out of that, and he came to the next level, which is called understanding. And then you refer to it as, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. In other words, I'm not locked into the psychic capabilities of myself. I'm locked into the respiratory control of my internal organs, how I relate to what I am. So, the fruit of the Spirit is not the gift of the Spirit. The gift of the Spirit is psychic powers. The fruit of the Spirit is understanding. Resurrection. That means evidence of not in decomposition after death, or take it with you and let them wander with everyone. If you're over here. Sweet. So these are the qualities that the atomic principle has to offer. God is within us, but he has to play both games, allow us to cater to the something for nothing attitude, or cater to the something for something attitude. But we're entitled to cater to something for nothing attitude as a child. Therefore, Paul says, when I'm a child, I think I'm a child. Now I'm a man, I think I'm a man. Meaning, we are entitled as a person, as a being, as an individual, to look for something for nothing attitudes. Because how? We are evolved to as a baby to an adult. We're not evolved from an adult to a baby. So we have to go by virtue of that. This is suffered to be so, for this is the way of righteousness. The chicken came before the egg. The baby came before the grown-up. So the something for nothing comes before the something for something. And then it's the freedom. So once you understand it, you're no longer stuck in it. One is slower than the other. I rather go slow and get the best results. When we go fast, and then I can start all over again. Mm-hmm. He says, to him that overcometh, I'll not say for the second time. But I make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. So it means that if you don't master the one route, you got to keep coming back again. And the fear of not wanting to come back is because we don't want to surrender the memory of who we are to the process of work and go through the journey to bond with the over to start the process.